Visual. Okay, we have audio and visual. Hello and welcome everybody, and we are recording. My name is Dan Kahn. I'm the National Field Coordinator for the Peace Alliance, and it's a pleasure to be with you all tonight. Thank you so much for joining us on our October call. The main topic of this call is about civil discourse and finding common understandings in the political and the personal realm. And we'll get more into various aspects of that, but first I want to just tell you the agenda for this call. In a few minutes, I'm going to introduce our two special guests, and we're going to hear from them, Sylvia Borstein and Emily Wickman, and we're going to have a chance for some question and answer and discussion. After that, we're going to hear from Nancy Merritt about the Department of Peace Building and our recent DC lobby days, and then we're going to hear about our action for this month. Get ready to take some action together. And we're going to have a reminder about an ongoing action area, which is about the National Peace and Justice Memorial, a truth and reconciliation process for this nation around issues of race and racial violence. And then we'll have a chance to hear from folks in the field. That's all of you, about what's going on in your neck of the woods. So that's the plan for tonight. And I probably don't need to tell any of you that the national conversation this past week has been quite challenging for many, if not all of us. I'm speaking, of course, mostly about what's been happening in the Supreme Court confirmation process. And I think it's really highlighted some of the difficulties, made it even more difficult in some ways for us to have political conversations. There's a lot of tenderness, I think, in many people's hearts and minds, and moving forward together poses some maybe unique challenges, the level and the type of challenges that we're facing. So I think it's really apt that on this call tonight, we have two special guests, both of whom are spiritual teachers and accomplished leaders in the field of wellness and mindfulness and human awareness. And one of them is our dear board member, Emily Wickman, and the other is her dear mother and our dear friend, Sylvia Borstein. So I'm going to hand the mic over to Emily to say a few words and introduce her mom. Welcome, Emily.
So good to see you, Dan. It always is. And I always find at the beginning when I get on a call like this that I feel so proud to be a part of an organization like this. And I've been on the board, I don't even know, 6 or 7 years now. I'm not even quite sure. But what I always felt so excited about was that the Peace Alliance has always been committed to being the peace, that not just that's what we're standing for or fighting for, but that really is who we aim to be as individuals in the organization. And I feel so good about how we continue to do that. Really, everybody here continues to do this. So proud to be a part of this and delighted to be here. And I think that we got to speak, my mom and I, I'm going to introduce her, Sylvia Borstein. Most people know who she is for other reasons besides, you know, she's an author and a noted teacher. She's also been a peace activist and a social justice activist since before I was born. Her mother was also an activist early on in New York City, you know, and when I was born, there were pictures of me in a stroller, you know, going down Market Street with, you know, and I'm in the stroller and my parents are back there still standing for peace and justice and reform and social reform and all of that. So I love it that I come from a heritage that takes a stand and that we are always committed to taking that peaceful stand. Here's my mother, the activist, the author, the teacher, and also my cohort. More and more we get to do fun things like talk with each other. So Mom, you want to say hello?
I do want to say hello. And I want to say also that it's always a great honor for me to be involved in the Peace Alliance. I am not an active board member, but I'm a member of the advisory board on the Peace Alliance. And so I've come to Washington and been on conferences and gone lobbying. So I am very, very proud of what the Peace Alliance has been doing and continues to do. The courage, especially in hard times, to continue to take a stand for peace, which is the only reasonable stance to take, is really very moving to me. We thought, Emily and I, that I would say a little bit about my thoughts about the ways in which we might, or a person might, maintain some sort of balance in this, in these turmoil times. I'll say something and she'll say something, and I'll say something and she'll say something. But what I want to propose before we either of us say anything else is that we do an action together. I like to do this at the beginning of all the meetings that I convene or attend, if people will let me do it. And that's to take a minute to do something without talking, something that's contemplative, something that will settle the mind. I was thinking before we started this call that I wouldn't use the word calm the mind, because these are not very calm times. I would emphasize, instead of calming the mind, balancing the mind so it can see clearly. And there are ways to balance the mind. So first of all, before we close our eyes, which is one of the ways, well, no, as a matter of fact, let's close our eyes first. Just for 1 minute, close your eyes and feel yourself sitting wherever you are, in your home, I hope. And think of these two sentences. Think of the sentences: breathing in, I calm my body. Breathing out, I smile. And try for the next 1 minute to synchronize those two sentences with your experience of breathing. Breathing in, I calm my body, do that, and breathing out, I smile. We'll have enough time probably for between 8 and 10 breaths and smiles. So start whenever you're ready. Breathing in, I calm my body. Breathing out, I smile. And still feeling yourself breathing and smiling, of course, open your eyes and look around at the people that you see in all the little boxes. People that you maybe know. I know two people in boxes. I know Dan and I know Emily. But I know about everybody that I see, that they share with me really the belief, the faith, that human beings can calm themselves down and think reasonably and make wise decisions. And in spite of everything, in spite of the fact that we did this before, and we marched before, and we protested before, and we signed petitions before, and we're still here protesting and marching and signing and standing for, we're still doing it. And these are the people who do it. And I feel a tremendous burst of love for all of you. I don't know who you are, but you're my people. So the difference between knowing in my heart that you're my people and that everybody really is my people, whether they are up to thinking my way yet, is what I'm working on at this point. So that was our meditation. And you can wave if you like that, so I'll know whether or not you like that. Okay, good. That's a dear thing to do in the beginning of a meeting, especially if you think the meeting isn't going to go so easily. If people breathe for a minute, breathing in, I calm my body, breathing out, I smile, and you look at each other and you say, these are my people, okay. And then you talk to each other. The story that I'd like briefly to tell you.
Well, before you start that story, I just wonder, does anybody else hear the feedback that I hear? Like, does it sound noisy or is it just me with the feedback? Dan, do you hear that noise in the background when my mom talks?
There is a little bit of background sound, and I wonder if Sylvia, could you get a little closer to the microphone? That might help it, just so your voice is more.
I can.
Anything else electronic around or something? Something feels like it's giving feedback. It's just when you're speaking, Mom. So something.
My cell phone is right here. Maybe that's doing it.
Maybe turn that off or something.
Okay, I'm turning it off. Then you will have to tell me when I've talked too long. And okay, that's all. And I'm right on top of my computer.
Okay, I hope it's comfortable.
I will tell you this story. The point of this story, which I don't have to tell you the point because it would be really obvious, is that for the most part, conversations become uncivil when people become tense because we get frightened, we don't see clearly, and we say any old thing. I was looking forward to last weekend very much for a long time because last Saturday night, my eldest granddaughter got married and 180 people came to that wedding. A lot of planning went into it, and I'm thrilled for her and her husband. And I was worried because my brother-in-law had come from Florida to be my guest in my home to go to the wedding. And I know him since he's 10 years old and he votes differently from the way I do. In spite of the fact that his brother, my husband, and I have gone to every lunch to try to educate our way of thinking to no avail. And the truth is, it became clear to me as the weekend unfolded very sweetly, and we stayed. Nobody even mentioned the fact that there was politics going on in the world. Nobody turned on a TV, nothing. And I kept on seeing him as the 10-year-old that he was when I met him. And four days went by before he left. Well, last evening, and I felt really kindly about him. He's a 75-year-old man. I know him from when he was 10. The last night that we had dinner together and we had safely maneuvered through that whole wedding without a bad word, the question of politics came up. And I said, you know, I read a lot about these kinds of things. And I've read a lot of books. So on such and such, I'd like to tell you when you just said, he'd said something like that before. I said that what you said wasn't really true from what I've read. And in this kind of a nice voice, I said, you know, and the best book on this was that. And if you'd like, I'll lend it to you. You can take it home with you on the plane. He did take it with him. And this also, I thought, met. And he listened. And he didn't say, I'm converted to your way. But what was important to me, I wasn't frightened when I was talking to him because I knew he wouldn't be contentious back. He'd just been my guest for 4 days. He was probably worried the whole 4 days that I would attack him, and I hadn't. I imagine he was. He was very much in the minority with his view. And I realized that when things go wrong with me in a conversation, where I try that they don't actually, is because I'm frightened or I frighten the other person. And so when I've spent 4 days with him in a non-contentious way and he could trust me, I could say a lot of things. And he took the book and went home, who knows. But we both were spared a lot of inner angst. And I think I used to have a cup that had an inscription on it from a London expression in the Second World War where it said, keep calm and carry on. I want to change that to keep clear and carry on, or keep balance and carry on. Calm, I can't count on, but balance. And really what I try to do is when I feel that ire is arising in me because I'm frightened of the situation, is I can, while standing on with somebody in a group at a party and people are talking, I begin to feel tense, say to myself, breathing in, I calm my body, breathing out, I smile. Nobody knows I'm meditating, but what I'm doing is I am balancing my mind so that when I open my mouth, nothing terrible and provocative is going to come out of it. What do you want to talk about the weekend, Emmett? That wasn't for you.
Well, it's funny when we were talking about what are we going to talk about tonight, and both my mom and I tend to speak from stories that are real. So we were at the same wedding for my niece, and I didn't have any pre-concern about it because I didn't have anybody staying at my house. But I arrived at the wedding, and all of a sudden I see the out-of-town guests that are there. And all of a sudden it occurs to me there's a certain diversity that's invisible from just looking. And I had the great fortune of sitting at a table with a family, some cousins, who, like my mom was saying, these cousins don't vote the way that I do. And I love them dearly. And they were there with their two grown sons. And it was from my perspective, we sat there and I could see that an argument. Now, these two sons happen to be journalists and so feel quite differently than their parents do. So you can imagine the stress that goes on in their family. And for the first time, because I rarely see them all together, I could see on the mom's face how distressing and painful it was for her to watch her husband, the father, be in argumentative type of debate with the two sons. And it just, this well of compassion came up for me that here, you know, this poor woman, she spent, I know what she did raising these children. I know her devotional love to him. And I know that they are acting and speaking, not acting so much, but definitely speak with such tremendous disrespect for their parents right now. I know they love them, but you could feel the disrespect that was there. And something about that dynamic just inspired me, and in a sort of a new way. And I've spoken to my cousin about this before, and I walked over to her and I sat down and I said, we chatted about it. And I said, you know, my mom and I are actually talking about this here, because she was sharing with me how painful it was that her family is being pulled apart and strained and stressed because of all of this. And she said, it may ruin our family. And that just broke my heart. I thought, no, we can't let this happen. I said, and there's a movement for civil discourse to really commit to having the conversation and getting to the place where we can meet people who think differently and vote differently and come together and say, let's on some level, I'm going to say be friends. You know, Peter Yarrow from Peter, Paul, and Mary, I had the pleasure of being with him when he was doing a concert a couple weeks ago. And he said, what if we could sit down and say, I don't know how you voted, but we can still be friends. And that to really enter from that place that we are all human beings. I like to use the phrase, when in doubt, zoom out. And when I zoom out, I see human beings. I don't see us and them. And from that perspective, how I show up begins to change and allows me to show up and be in civil discourse and talk about how can we talk about what we have in common. And I even started making a list about what would me and my cousin, what would we have in common together. And I said, well, we both want clean air. We would both like a peaceful world. We both want safety for our children. We both want great schools. We both, you know, and I could start to make the list of what we have in common. And that just felt really powerful for me. And so she and I talked about it. I said, you and I should do something together. Because mostly we gather and I meet with like-minded people. But the important piece is to somehow reach out and with not like-minded people, but they're still people. And to see if there's a way that we can discuss this and make things better.
That was terrific. And I couldn't choose which piece I wanted to add on to. I think that a very big piece of learning for me in all of this discussion, these kinds of discussions, is about paying attention to getting frightened. And that when I get frightened by something, like, uh-oh, they're going to pass laws that are going to do things that are going to be terrible for people, and I have to do something about it, to change everybody's mind right now. And I get frightened, I get angry at the people that I'm talking to. And I'm touched by your moment of compassion for poor Jean. She's a mother just like you are. If your sons spoke terribly for you, we'd be heartbroken. So to be able, everybody is a person with an idea, and to remember that here's one more story. We'll let other people talk, but Emily and I were together 2 years ago on the night of the election, and we were in Mexico teaching at a health resort, and the two of us were on the program for being a duo, for just talking about mind peace and peace of mind and all of that and whatever. And we sat down on the stage and people are gathering for the evening and people are having their cell phones in their hands because they're watching the returns. And we're in Mexico and this event is starting at 8 o'clock and the polls closed, the election got called at 8 o'clock Pacific time. And you could see what was happening. And I remember Emily leaning over to me and said, what are we going to do, Ma? Because all of a sudden, we got this whole room full of people. And we said just about what you just said, that the people sitting on one side or the other of you right now in this audience do not know how the person next to you voted. But they were the person who were lying next to you on a yoga mat earlier today, or went on a hike with you this morning somewhere, or was doing some gymnastic class with you earlier, or that you enjoyed your lunch with, and you liked them fine then. And they didn't get any worse since then. They're the same person. And to be able to see this person is my challenge, not my enemy, and to not be enemying people. You know, like you can friend people on Facebook, you can unfriend them. To have as one's job in life to not unfriend anybody for their political view. We wouldn't unfriend anybody because of the color of their skin or the faith tradition that they operate out of. They're a person in the world breathing my same air. How to see my people, like here are these people that I see, and see the whole world as my people. It just is a little move in the mind from this to bigger, and it can happen easily if I'm not frightened. Not so easily, maybe, but if I'm not frightened. You know, one more thing, and then maybe we'll ask for questions. Years ago, Arthur Clarke, who wrote the Space Odyssey, wrote another book that not so many people read called Childhood's End, and it begins with a scenario where one morning, all the big cities of the world, Moscow, Paris, London, Washington, D.C., people go outside and there's a huge spaceship over the city looming. And on, you know, all over, maybe 10 spaceships in the world, and big. And all of a sudden, none of the people, everybody forgets who's my enemy. I don't talk to the Russians, or I don't talk to the this, or I don't talk to the that, because if you've got outer space is now looming over everybody. Everybody needs to talk to each other. We have so many things looming over everybody now. The climate business, which is daily we're hearing more about, is looming over everybody. If we could just look away from this or that decision and say, look, we are all in peril. What are we going to do? I thought, Dan, that you might want to have people ask us questions.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you both, first of all, Emily and Sylvia. I believe this is a very important conversation to be having now. And I can't pretend that it's all very settled and easy in my mind. I hear and imagine challenges in this. I'll let folks in the field, you know, speak what's on their minds, and I might have some stuff to discuss as well. I meant to mention at the beginning of the call, we're still sort of working out the tweaks in our Zoom experience. Folks can raise their hand, and there should be an icon to raise your hand. There's usually a little menu bar and three dots, and if you press those three dots, there's a hand-raising option. If you're not using the app, in other words, if you joined Zoom directly from the website, then you might not have that hand-raising option. So even if you already have Zoom on your computer, if instead of using your computer app, if you came straight through the website, you may not be able to raise your hand. And folks who have dialed in by phone, you can press *9, and that will raise your hand, that I'll be able to see it, okay? So if you have a question or want to contribute to the conversation, if you are on video but not using the app, you can hang up and come back in using the app if you really want to raise your hand, or you can wave your hand and maybe I'll see it. And if you're on your phone, you can press *9. I'm looking for raised hands and so far not seeing any. So I may take a facilitator's privilege and raise my own thought. Okay. Hopefully some folks are seeing an easy option to raise your hand. And folks who can see me, who I can see you, wave your hand if you can see that you have the capacity to raise your hand. Okay, I see at least a handful of hands waving. Great. So here's my thought, just to stir the waters a little bit, Sylvia and Emily. I still feel challenged, and I'm feeling it partly for myself and partly just, I think, through all the voices of my friends on Facebook, friends in near and far, who are saying something like, this is not, you know, just about having a friendly connection with someone. This is about power and people who really are going to do things. And I hear what you're saying, Sylvia. It's about the fear, letting fear come in. But I guess I have sort of a 2 or 3 part question. Where is a place? And I brought this up with Emily earlier. Is there a place for confrontation? And then another part is there a place for my own upset, for my rage, for my sorrow? How do I deal with those three things in the context of moving forward together as a society, building peace, working together? Can you sort of address that a little bit?
Mom, I want to jump in.
And then I'll pass it over to Em.
Okay,
your question about how do you deal with the rage and the overwhelm and the suffering in the mind. Everybody's different, but I think the operative thing is taking care of yourself enough to not become crazed. I meant it when I said, stay clear and keep going. Because when my mind gets filled with rage, I'm not clear. I'm furious. And with that knowledge, if I let myself become furious now, I'm not going to see the clear action that I ought to take. I'll make it worse for myself. I'll do something inept. And what's more, I'll continue to be in terrible pain myself. So, for instance, I have since the day of the confirmation hearings last Thursday, I haven't turned on my television set. I realized that is poison for me to watch. It's just great. Other people can do it, and I'm not saying don't do it, but I can't do it and remain sane. I read the New York Times every day. I read all the editorials. I see plenty of stuff online. I listen to the Mozart Horn Concerto every chance I get. I am doing things that are not either going to soothe my mind and certainly not frazz it up more than it has to be frazzed. That's one thing that I do. I also pay attention to how do my mind feel as I'm about to go into some interaction. You know, those things that those science people used to have, put brain in motion before operating mouth, that I have to be sure that I can count on myself to not shout out or say something provocative or extra. If we had lots of time, I'll tell you a story about how I did that after the election in 2008. It's a great story, but we don't have the time. On another call, I'll tell that story. I made that mistake, and somebody questioned me, and I questioned them back and forth, and I ended up feeling humiliated and really apologetic. So first thing is I have to take care of myself, and I have to assume that if we're going to come through this, because I might set a parameter with somebody that I know it's going to be really a difficult conversation. I'll be happy to talk with you about this. We have to make an agreement that we're not going to shout at each other, and we're not going to call each other names or each other's choices stupid. That we're going to do this civilly, like the particular thing, petition that we're all signing about commitment to civil discourse. That before I want to talk to somebody who's got a different idea, like my cousin or my brother-in-law, we have to have a commitment that we're going to do it civilly before I do it, otherwise I'll get worse. What were you going to say, Em?
Two things, in the same loan. Addressing first the question of, do we get to feel what we feel? You know, and I think the answer absolutely has to be yes. When I'm talking about the importance, you know, when I'm teaching people how to do their personal inner work, one of the main lessons is about feeling your emotions honestly and appropriately, all of them. And that rage and anger and confusion, whether, you know, confusion can get you in a trap forever, but to recognize that rage, if we open our mouth and speak or act when we're in our rage, then we can, in seconds, decimate relationships and destroy really any chance of having a positive impact. So while I'm a big proponent of if you feel rage, you're already feeling it. So it's not about whether or not you should feel rage. We do as human beings. We get triggered. And if we feed that rage and give the story to it, you know, and it just takes turning on the television and watching something like a confirmation hearing of somebody who I would have all sorts of labels for that did not fit the description of a, you know, a Supreme Court justice on my view, I could feel a lot of rage and confusion. And I opened my mouth and went to speak to people in that moment. Nothing of value would happen. But the rage that I feel in that moment can be of value for me if I choose to look at it and transform it. You can actually channel it into, I am so not okay with what's happening here. That's what my rage says. I am so not okay with what's happening here. And if I hand it over to the fear paradigm, to my frightened self, then I'm going to have to go out there and hurt and kill and destroy everybody who thinks in a different way. And if I can rescue the moment by saying, I'm so not okay with going on here, let me do whatever self-care I need to do to bring myself back to a place where, okay, I can see clearly, I'm still not okay with what's going on here. But I've brought myself back to that place of balance and clarity where I can say, now, what am I going to do with this upset? I'm going to get active. I'm going to take action. And from that place, you ask the question, what would be action that would actually bring, and I make the distinction between, is this a healing action or a harming action? And, you know, will this bring healing? Because I think everybody that's showing up for this call is really, you know, seeking, and everybody in this movement wants healing to happen for individuals, for the communities, for families, for the nation, and for the world. And I think part of what we're seeing right now is our woundings coming up to the surface. And that if we're not careful with our rage and our fear and our grief even, which can turn into hostility so quickly, the grief can go from I'm so sad about what's going on, and within seconds, the grief can transform into blame. And it's no longer grief. And that if we could actually bring it back to the grief, which is an authentic emotion that is important for us to feel, we could feel the despair of, oh dear, what's happening here? This is not good for humanity. And from that place, you can start to, I think, activate the guidance system that will lead you towards what would be a really great way for me to bring healing. But that's the transformation of the rage.
I think you tell such a good example of that when you talked about noticing in that moment the pain that Cousin Jean was in and have tremendous compassion for her.
Yeah.
You know, that if we stop, and I was watching you and I was thinking, you're such a good example of what you were saying, because you said rage and you, and as I'm watching you, anybody, you know, in a moment of rage, you don't feel at all good. Your body feels terrible. So to say to myself, wait a minute, you're in pain, sweetheart. Just let's just get a grip here. I'm really furious about this. I'm really furious about this. And how can I just not, can I let my body relax and figure out something to do because I'm furious about this? It must be happening.
And to come to the bottom, I am still furious about this. What could I do? And to find, and for everybody has a different way of doing, and if getting on the phone and calling somebody is a do, if signing a pledge is doing, is committing. My commitment to not acting from fear actually had me put a tattoo on my wrist to remind me. I did that just a few months ago. And it actually says, choose love. Because I think we have a choice between choosing the love paradigm or the fear paradigm. the fear paradigm picks us. I think it's our default, and that it is this ultimate action to choose love. And when we come to from the paradigm of love, which encapsulates the truth paradigm, which recognizes that, you know, we're seeking connection, not disconnection, then all of the actions and all of the words that come out of my mouth and come out of my being come from that place. And I can rest easy that my actions are having a positive impact for the most part.
I have one more tip, one more idea about what do you do when you dislike, because I was again watching you. I was thinking this might be the primary thing that I do when I'm beside myself and there isn't an action, you know, like a social action that I can go out and do. The action that I do is I call my friends. I call a good friend and I say, I'm beside myself. I'm tearing my hair out. You know, I look forward to grandchildren being born, great-grandchildren getting born, if the world is heating up. Talk to me a little bit. And talking to my friends is probably right up there with calming my mind with meditation, talking to my friends who aren't going to whip me up but going to say, listen, sweetheart, we'll just keep voting. We're going to do this. We'll send out more stuff. I need somebody to talk me down out of a tree when I'm distraught. So.
I wanted to also address what you mentioned, Dan, about confrontation. When do we, is it okay to? And what does it mean, confrontation? The word confrontation has, to me, a little edginess to it, of like a little bit of I'm gonna get in your face. But the idea of, you know, confronting the issue and challenging another voice that might be right in front of you is, I think, vital, you know, and to be able to hold your own. Let's say you're in a circle of people who don't think the way you do, and they're all going at it. How do we say, wow? You know, you can't say, most of us don't say anything, I think, just to avoid the conflict. But what if we, from a place of this place of love, say, you know what, everybody in this circle, I think differently than most of you here, I think. And I have a different view of what this is about. Would you be willing to hear me share how I see it, rather than telling everybody, you're all a bunch of idiots, you're completely out of your mind, you got it all wrong, here's what the truth is. I could say, I see it differently. Can I share that with you?
That's a great line, I see it differently. I'm worried, Dan, that you asked that we'd be finished 5 minutes ago, and we weren't. Can I take two more minutes, and then I'll be finished?
That sounds great. I wouldn't trade the last 3 minutes for anything. Go ahead.
And if there's questions, jump.
If this is exactly the point that Emily was making. 8 years ago, now 10 years ago, in the week of the election of Mr. Obama to the presidency, 3 days later, I was at a dinner to thank the people who had been very generous in donations to the San Francisco Zen Center. And my donation was to be there that night as a speaker. So I was sitting with a table of people who were donors to the Zen Center, very nice people. They're kind of to the Zen Center Hospice Project. So they're very nice people. They're donating to make it a peaceful passing for a lot of people. And we were all talking about lots of different things at the table. And everybody was a very interesting person. And the man opposite me had just come back from a trip in the Amazon and was describing parrots that he'd seen, and I admired him so much that he was interested in that. And somebody else was interested. We were all very convivial, very nice. And then the topic got on to the election that had happened 3 days before. And everybody at the table was very excited about that, in a good mood about it. Almost everybody. Seven people were very excited about it. And then the man across from me, who had just gotten back from the Amazon, and with the parrots and suit I had so much admired, and demeanor I had so much admired, said in a very quiet voice, I think all of you would be very surprised to know that I voted differently from all of you. And the whole table got very quiet and didn't say anything. And I imagined it as my imagination. I could not hear it. But you can imagine everybody's mind, all the ears, trying like tectonic plates, trying to adjust to the fact that this perfectly pleasant man in the nice suit, who was a generous donor to the hospice project, who went to the Amazon to look at parrots, had voted differently. And you could just sort of, and everybody said, the equivalent of, well, of course, everybody sees things differently. And he went on to say, you know, I'm a banker, so we generally vote for things that we think economically different from everybody. It was very spacious. And I thought to myself that if the mood is convivial and you've already established that everybody's a decent person, somebody can say in a quiet voice, I think differently. I voted differently. Causes to stop in their tracks and think, and then make room for that person. That's a good story. Anyway, we stayed way too long.
That is a great story. I agree. It's a beautiful story to end this segment with, I think. I'm imagining that Emily, as a board member, you're probably going to stick around. We might circle back to this a little bit later in the conversation. We'll see. Sylvia, I really appreciate you being with us for this time. And I'm going to remind everybody this is being recorded, and the recording will be available on our website if you're inclined to share this with other folks. For now, Sylvia, if you feel like staying with us for the next 17 minutes of our call, you're more than welcome. But of course, I understand if you have other places to be, we'll bid you farewell, and we'll see you next time.
Well, thank you very, very much for inviting me. And I'm going to leave and recuperate from my weekend.
Totally understandable. Yes,
thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure having you both. I'll say, Emily and Sylvia, you did a great team job, and I really enjoyed it. So thank you both, and have a good evening, Sylvia. Have a good rest.
With my next tattoo, I'll get mom.
I love it. I love it. All right. On to other topics. I believe next on our agenda, let me take a quick look just to make sure I'm not off base with this. I am correct. Is Nancy Merritt with a Department of Peacebuilding update and an update from Lobby Days, which took place in Washington, D.C. not long ago. Nancy, it looks like you're already unmuted. Did you unmute yourself? Am I wrong about that? It's just something about where the cursor is that I'm having a hard time unmuting you. Oh, dear. Nancy, I can see you, but are you muting yourself on your phone? Nancy, I'm going to ask you to maybe hang up and dial back in because for some reason I do not see the ability to unmute you. And maybe we'll move to another topic. Oh, now I see you. Now I can unmute you. You just did something different. Can you speak now?
Yeah, I did some entering some code or something. So
fantastic.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, Emily, and please thank your mom. I wish you could have both been in Washington with us. So obviously, while we were there, it was against this whole backdrop of we would go into every office and we would see Bill Cosby on the screen and being taken away in handcuffs, or Brett Kavanaugh, or, you know, the protesters. So this was totally the backdrop of what was going on while we were there. The sort of bottom line numbers, we visited 140 offices, including both Senate and congressional offices. 19 senators this time, which was kind of a record high. We usually focus on the Congress. And as a result of our visits, shortly before we went there, Ro Khanna signed on as a co-sponsor from California. Yvette Clark from New York signed on, and Marcia Fudge from Ohio signed on. So we're hoping we'll get a few more as we do our follow-up phone calls and emails and all that stuff. We also want to thank the folks who did the Amplify calls. We had an action and a list of people we ask people to call, and I've heard back from some of those folks, and they got really good positive responses from the people they talked with. So we'll be following up on that. And I know we did a petition action with the Peace Alliance, and I don't have the exact numbers of responses for that yet. And then leading up to all that, we distributed our Amplify flyers pretty much a lot of meetings throughout the country and in Canada, where we were, some of our folks were the week, a couple of days before. So I won't go really through what we did at all the meetings, because we don't have a lot of time. But one of the highlights for me was taking letters from constituents to the meetings, and we ended up taking around 60 letters from high school students in San Diego. And we took letters from a woman in Texas, a teacher who had a really good testimony. And we took letters from New Mexico and California. And one of the letters from the kids in San Diego, they were talking about how violence prevention is so important to them, and that a lot of them go to school every day wondering what desk they're going to have to hide under that day when a shooter comes. And they talked about domestic violence. They talked about all kinds of violence in their lives. And then they said, we need a Department of Peace building because we need to get past all of this violence and wasting all of these resources on that, and we need to start curing cancer and other diseases. So it was really heartwarming, the letters, which I will put up. I will write an article about that, but that was very touching. There were, as you can imagine, there were so many highlights. Maybe in a minute, Yelena could talk to us, but she came to Advocacy Days, and the Friday before, she visited a school in Washington, D.C., where the kids, the young kids basically told her that we need to listen to them. They know how to deal with conflict prevention. And they told her about, they called it CAT, which is calm down, then for C, A is for apologize, and T is to use your tools. And so we took this message to almost every single meeting we went to, and included that with what we were talking about. When we went to Senator Kamala Harris's office from California, we told her legislative aide about this, and she said, what school was that? I want to get my son enrolled. And we're like, well, we'll ask Yelena, we'll provide you the information, but how old is your son? And she said, he's 1 year old, but I've got to get that school, the name of that school. So then we went to Dianne Feinstein's office. We had a meeting actually with her Judiciary Committee liaison. And as you know, all the Judiciary Committee meetings were going on for the Kavanaugh hearings, and he welcomed us. He was like so happy to talk about something other than that. And so we told him about this CAT method, and we said, it'd be great if tomorrow when you go into the Judiciary Committee, you could ask all the members of the Senate to please just do this, calm down, apologize, and use your tools. And he's like, yeah, that would be great. So that was a highlight. Our very last meeting was with Senator Murkowski from Alaska, who is Lori's senator. And this happened almost by accident. We dropped a packet by, and they said, we'll call later and set up a phone call. And as most of you know, she's a Republican, and she was the only Republican not to vote to confirm Kavanaugh. And when we walked into her office, her aide was just so amazing. She said, "I'm so glad you're here. I'm so conflict resolution is my thing. The senator is all about that." And so we tried to start finding common ground or ways that this would apply in Alaska. And I said, "Well, I don't know a lot about Alaska, but I can imagine that the Native population, like the Native population in throughout the country, has the highest suicide rate, the highest domestic violence rate, and that is a connection, that is a common ground." And then one of our people came up with the idea of it would be so great to have a companion bill in the Senate, and it would be so great to have two women Democrats and two women Republican senators to introduce it. Who knows if that'll ever happen, but it just seemed like the right timing and the right flow of things. We went to so many other offices. Everything was just amazing. We went to Colleen Hanabusa's office from Hawaii, and just were dropping off a packet. When we talked to her receptionist, he had peace cranes all across his desk. And we said, "Wow, those are really neat. Who folded those?" And he said, "Well, the congresswoman did." So we went, "Wow, that's pretty cool. We better follow up with her." So this was just maybe a small sampling of what we did. We advocated for people to co-sponsor Department of Peace building, and we had quite a few other bills we were asking them to co-sponsor relating to gun violence prevention and the violence against women appropriations bill, and establishing a select committee on gun violence and some other things like that. So we'll see. We'll follow up on that with them too. And those are just some tiny highlights of what we were able to do. But I just really appreciate anybody who was part of this and who either called in or did their petitions or whatever. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
I love that story. Yeah, really amazing, Nancy. I can hardly do it justice with my commentary on what you're describing, but I'll try just to say I really appreciate the seeds that you are planting, you and the committee and folks that are working with you. Talk about bringing civil discourse into places where it is arguably most needed. I mean, everywhere. It's most needed from the kindergartens to the families to the neighborhoods, and the fact that you brought it to Congress in the midst of these hearings and those connections, walking our talk is really such a beautiful and powerful thing. So I just appreciate you doing that. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. We have 5 minutes left, and I'm committed to ending on time tonight. Last few months, we have not. So I'm going to just say about 2 minutes about you all should have received information about our civil discourse signing document, taking the pledge to engage and continue in civil discourse. The action for the month is to sign that, commit to it, to this pledge, and share it. And share it however, wherever you are most moved, whether that's in your online circles, with friends, family, perhaps with your elected representatives or candidates for office. You should have all of your email, you would have received an email topic from Judy Kimmel, one of our other board presidents, about 4 or 5 days ago. So you can search your email, you can forward that to friends. Please take a look at that and consider signing it, just dedicating ourselves to moving forward with the kind of clarity and calm that Sylvia and Emily talked about. Another topic, briefly, is the truth and reconciliation process. that is promoted by the National Peace and Justice Memorial in Montgomery, Alabama. Folks who have been tuned in with us since the summer, who are on the July call or the August call, may remember that we started focusing on this Peace and Justice Memorial, also known as the Lynching Memorial, which is a new national memorial institute in a museum in Montgomery, Alabama. And it was founded by the Equal Justice Initiative, which is founded by Bryan Stevenson. Many of you are probably familiar with Bryan Stevenson. It basically is an opportunity for counties around the country to come to terms with their specific history of racially motivated violence, specifically lynching, but also beatings, unfair incarcerations, other practices that have been violent and racially biased. So please take a look at the July-August action sheet available on our website. If you go to the Mobilize tab and the call recordings, along with the call recordings, you can have access to the action sheets, and the July-August action sheet will be there. My plan is to create a template of an op-ed piece, so and to ask folks who are in our network to create an op-ed for your own local or regional paper in November and or December, publicizing this memorial and publicizing the need or desire for us to engage in a national truth and reconciliation process, to do it as a nation and to do it county by county for each place to recognize, you know, here in Leon County, where I live, I believe there were upwards of 50 lynchings that have been documented. So we need to reconcile ourselves to what that means for us as a culture, what impact that has had. Each of those lynchings is an act of extreme terror, and you can extrapolate from there what effect that has had in our society. So take a look at that action sheet. Think about an op-ed that you might write. I myself am thinking about visiting Montgomery in December. So if you've got some free time over your December holidays, you might think about going to Montgomery, Alabama, and experiencing the National Monument to Peace and Justice. Let me check my agenda. That is about it, and we've got 1 minute left, so I don't think we really have time for any shares, unless there's one just burning share of 30 seconds or less. Stephen Smith, is there anything that was not said? Stephen's another one of our wonderful board members, not said about the common understandings or civil discourse initiative that you would like to bring out in this final minute.
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yes. When,
I think people brought up the issue of how to deal with confrontation. Excuse me. I think the advice that I got from a very good friend who deals in conflict is to be very hard on issues and not hard on people. So you can really challenge people on their belief systems, on things you don't agree with, as long as you keep in mind you're dealing with a human being and you don't cross that line. And that's not always easy, but that's, I think, a good piece of advice.
That's terrific. So much, Stephen, for all your in this initiative as well. Thanks to all our board members. Terry's on the call with us, has also put a lot of work into that. I'm going to unmute everybody so you can say goodnight or whatever you'd like to say to each other. Thank you all for being with us, and wish you a wonderful night, week, and hopefully talk with you next week.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Cheers.